What if you discovered it at 60? Wouldn't you rather spend 10, 15 years, whatever it is, doing something at some point that you know you're meant to do and that excites you? Wouldn't you rather that than just sort of phone it in the rest of your life?
Welcome to The Business of Doing Business. I'm your host, Dwayne Kerrigan. With 35 years in business and close to 30 ventures across 12 industries, I've seen a lot. Amid the celebrity allure of entrepreneurship, many exceptional entrepreneurs remain shadowed. Here, I team up with these hidden talents to unveil their challenges and successes. Dive in with me to unearth entrepreneurial gems, learn from our experiences, and get educated. Victoria Terrio.
You got it.
Not spelt at all like Terrio, but... phonetically, Victoria Terrio. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad we got introduced. We actually don't know each other. Most of the people that come onto the show, I know. But you do a podcast called Discovering You, and it's produced by Heather, who produces this show. She was like, wow, you know, I think maybe you and Victoria should talk. And then we got talking, and I was like, wow, we definitely should get you on the podcast. So you're the founder of Discovering What Works. You have a podcast called Discovering You. It's been going for about 3 years, I think, now. And congratulations on that. But you do workshops. You do communication workshops, team building workshops, EQ versus IQ workshops. You've been a keynote speaker. You do disc coaching, which we have had the conversation has come up many times in some of my interviews and conversations with others about disc. So that was kind of one of the things that we kind of connected on. But then as I got doing a little bit more research on you, I found it really interesting. So you were in a book called Pursuit 365. And in that book, you were quoted, you said, you're intrigued with what motivates human behavior. And then the piece that I thought was really, really interesting, which we had like a very brief conversation on the phone before this, but I didn't know this at the time, which really fascinates me. And I really have now become an instant fan of yours, but it took you 20 years to hone into what you really wanted to do and kind of chart your course. How you put it is chart your course through happiness and success. And so I'm actually very interested. I have a very deep questions about actually initially what got you to start your business, because you came from the real estate industry, you got into disc, like I know all that. But I'm really curious what drives somebody, because we have so many listeners who are either in a business that they don't love, or they're in a family business, they haven't found what they want to do. But we also have a lot of people, a lot of listeners who work for other companies. We have a lot of younger listeners. We have a pretty large segment of listeners between 24 and kind of 38. And we hear a lot like, you know, I haven't found my purpose. I don't know what my passion is. And people get so frozen in not doing something because they feel they have to do the right thing. But you're self-proclaimed, like it took you 20 years to really start, like, yeah. I'm going to open up my own business. And I'd love to really kind of dig in about that and find out what happened. What was the thought process? How'd you overcome your fear? And, you know, because you've done such an unbelievable job with the company that you've created.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, thanks for that. Yeah, it's funny looking back on it, reflecting. I don't know at the time if I didn't realize I wasn't doing what I was meant to be doing. I've always been, you mentioned it, somebody that wanted to dig deeper on things. And so, yeah, I would have jobs and I would be, you know, happy. I liked the atmosphare. I liked the people I work with. Maybe I was excited about that. I also, in terms of my personal life, moved away at a certain point with my husband. We were transferred to the US and I actually couldn't work there. So that was interesting. I didn't have a green card. So I had a lot of time to really think things through. I, of course, became a mom there. And so that's a whole other chapter of my life, wanting to stay at home for a few years and raise my daughter. And then when I got back into it, I think because when you become a parent and as you're maturing, what it really does is I think it really sharpens some focus for you. And you think, is the time that I'm spending away from my family, is it sort of filling me up or is it draining me? And I became aware of really what fills my cup. And so I did have the opportunity when I was working at this company to get introduced to the concept of DISC, and I got certified there. And for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's basically a sort of behavioral assessment, which gives you an understanding, so to speak, like what we're saying, what makes people tick. It helps you understand your motivators, how you prefer to be communicated with, what your strengths are. And it's one of those things, I don't know, Dwayne, if you've ever had this experience, but sometimes somebody will say, like, you hear something like it's a little whisper. There's like a little whisper in your ear. And there was just something that when I just became introduced to it, I just could literally feel it in my body. I could feel this excitement growing. And I didn't even know how to explain it. Like, okay, what is this? Why is this creating this feeling in me? And so I listened. I leaned in and I listened. What is this about? Took a deep dive into it. What is motivating me to do this? And then I just realized, again, I think I've always been somebody that, you know, I describe myself more as probably an ambivert, but leaning towards the introvert side. So I'm very analytical, reflective. I think a lot of things like that are missed in a busy business world. And this spoke to me. This spoke to me in a way where I thought, oh, I can understand the differences in how people operate and things that perhaps I have been tripped up by in the past, misunderstandings that I've maybe witnessed in the workplace. I think having this tool can be a game changer for how people operate, people with different personality styles. And it just almost felt like it just ignited this passion in me. And I thought, okay, the way we're using it here is great. Most people use it for just sort of maybe recruiting and hiring, but now what's the next step? So then I also got certified in team facilitation, which is really helping teams grow strategically, but also ensuring that everybody can really lean into their strengths and respect the diversity on the team and be able to have conversations using DISC as a neutral platform that they wouldn't be able to have otherwise.
But it's interesting. So I'm trying to timeline a little bit here, because did you do this while you were working for the other business?
Yeah.
When did you transition into your own business? Because I'm very interested in talking about DISC and team building, and we'll get to that. What I'm really fascinated with was late in your career, 20 years, you're never supposed to ask a woman, you know, at what age did you do this or how old are you or all that? And I'm not asking you how old you are, but I'm curious, like from a timeline perspective, because I find it inspirational. I'll be honest with you. Not only do I find it inspirational, I know that there are people out there. I think COVID has kind of created an opportunity for people. We go from working, you know, 5 days a week, we're driving into the office every day, to not going into the office at all, to now being integrated back into the office. And people are like, hey, I don't like this. I want to find my own path. I want to have my own business. I don't want to work for the man anymore. I don't want to do the grind. They want to have control of their own destiny. They want freedom. And you are someone who could be defined in that category. And then you stepped out on your own and you took the step. Not only did you take the step, I mean, or self-proclaimed introvert. And it started with, you know, what I heard was there was a whisper in my ear. Whereas most people would take that whisper and they may ignore it, or they may just, you know, excuse it or go, oh, okay, well, yes, I'm excited about this or I'm interested in this. And then they stay with their level of certainty and don't make that bold step to the other side. And I'm really, really curious how you did it and, you know, kind of what it looked like.
Yeah. So I agree with you that most people kind of ignore it. And I think looking back, I probably was ignoring things, you know, over time, the sort of quiet whispers. And then I think, as I said in the book, I it became louder and louder, and all of a sudden it was sort of screaming at me. So I think as with life, it's not just one thing. It's a confluence of factors. What ended up happening at the company was that, you know, they were trying it out. It was kind of a test case or experimental. I became more and more passionate about it and saying, oh, we can do this and we can do this. And they were sort of like, that sounds great, but I don't think we have the budget to do this and this. And well, you're really good at X, Y, and Z. And we might want you to be doing more of X, Y, and Z and maybe less of this with the DISC, because we just don't have the budget to take it to the level you want to. And that was sort of a crossroads where I was like, okay, I could stay and I could do this, take on this other job that, again, they said we really see this as important and we know you're great at this. And, you know, there's things like you can be really great at, but they don't fill your tank. So yeah, maybe there were those things. And I got to the point where I was like, okay, this is a crossroads. I have an opportunity here. And the nice thing is everybody knew. They would tease me in the office about being so obsessed with this. So they knew I had this passion. And so then we had to have a conversation. And I said, listen, if I were to go out and do this on my own, would I have your support? Because a lot of the people I'd already started with would be an existing client base. So I am not by definition a risk taker. So I think you and I would probably be different in our personalities on that. So the fact that I did this is very unique for me. It really is. I can't highlight that enough. Those of you who know DISC, my D is sort of midline, but it's not like a super high D. So I asked, would I be able to provide this to the network of people that I have? Would I be able to? And so we came to an agreement and they were very respectful and supportive. So it was a win-win. It was a best case scenario. Honestly, Dwayne, I think that was the impetus. I've thought about that. How long would it have taken me if I hadn't expressed my desire, like, we can take this further, we can do this? And when I realized that was not going to happen, I had that choice. Do I stay here and play it safe and do something that maybe I'm not going to be passionate about? And then what do I do with this newfound knowledge and interest and passion I have? And I just thought, you know what? Felt like this is the time. And I honestly, you know, to your point about the age, I think that kind of helped a bit because I've been down the road. I've seen how things work and what I'm good at. And I know that I'm a very good independent worker. I know that I don't need external things to keep me going. I have my own levels of motivation. I want to do things. And I also know that I have to be really invested in what I'm doing. I'm not good at doing something that's just like a 9 to 5, this is the job. Okay, now you're finished. It's off your mind. No, I need to feel invigorated. I need to feel excited. And I need to know that I'm making a difference. To me, this is really the big thing. And I would say at least once a week, I get to experience something, whether it's individual, someone I'm talking to individually, helping them through stuff, or a team. When I have these breakthrough moments where I see somebody gets it and they think, oh my gosh, I didn't know this. Now I have this knowledge. And that is the best part of it for me. It really is. Knowing that what I can impart can make a difference to somebody and improve their work life, their let's say it's coaching, their sales career. Sometimes it's an interpersonal conflict in a work situation. If I can come in and help that, I feel so rewarded from that.
Listen, it's a gift to be able to create something like that, that allows you to give back to others and, you know, improve their lives. And so congratulations to you. I love it. I'm curious, a couple of questions from that conversation, which was, like, how old were you? How old were your kids? I want people who are sitting on the fence to hear this story, because, I mean, I think it's a phenomenal story and not one you come across so often. You come across way more often people who are like, oh, I want to do my own thing and I want to push my, but I don't know how, and I don't know how to make the leap or whatever. And so what was your kind of situation? How old were your kids? And
I was around 40. And my daughter, she was not super young. She was emerging into her teen years.
So almost in high school or?
Yeah. So basically at the point where it wasn't fully as hands-on. I mean, I think as those of us who have teenagers know, that's all, there becomes a whole other set of things you need to be there for and be aware. It's a different skill set too, right? But yeah, I think I felt like, oh, she's capable of doing a lot of these things on her own. And, you know, watching the little individual person that she's becoming, you've obviously read my article in the book. And basically what my advice is so for me, oh, well, gosh, like 40 is too late. Like, you know, you could be thinking that, but like, why? So my point is, what if you discovered it at 60? Wouldn't you rather spend 10, 15 years, whatever it is, doing something at some point that you know you're meant to do and that excites you? Wouldn't you rather that than just sort of phone it in the rest of your life? That just wasn't fine with me anymore. I was able to do it to a point, and then I was like, yeah, this isn't going to work for me.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, look, you can frame any story you want.
Right.
Easily, when your children or your child is early teens, you can frame the story if you want it to serve you in that way to say, hey, this is not the right time. I'll have to wait till they get out of high school. And then it's, you know, then it's a different story. And so I think the takeaway of that is for those of you who are on the precipice, or you're thinking about a change, or you're thinking about a shift, or you desire more, you know, be careful of the story that you tell yourself And you had a great strategy. You know, you had a potential client base kind of set up, which I think is smart strategy. Like, that's just, if you're going to open up a business, that's a good business strategy. You can do that while you're working in your current career.
Absolutely.
And start part-time, weekends, evenings, that kind of stuff. And there's lots of strategies, but I think the courage to make that jump, I just, you know, I commend you for that. It's inspiring. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it was definitely one of the most risk-taking for me and courageous things at the time. But now I can't imagine. Like, it's funny when they say that. Do you ever regret that, or do you think it would have been different? I think, oh my gosh, I literally can't even imagine doing what I was doing before. It's like, no, I cannot imagine now anything but this.
That's fantastic. I am curious, from an introvert's, you know, as you mentioned,
yeah,
building the business, you know, going out, because it's one thing to take the courage. Then once you've kind of jumped off the cliff and or burned the boats or however you want to say it, you know, you're now going faced with the, oh my God, like, I got to build this business. I have to create some traffic. I have to meet people. I have to sell this thing. I've got to convince people that I'm going to add value. How was that journey in the beginning days for you? What was kind of some of the, maybe for lack of a better word, like the psychology that you had to overcome to get there?
I'm so glad that you asked that question, because it allows me to kind of frame up introversion, because I think a lot of people, and maybe some of the listeners, will be viewing it probably the way I used to view it, or the way I think society almost viewed it as to what it means. How I felt, and again, I did have, like you said, that base. I had that network. So I had a lot of people that I know. And I have to say, I'm blessed that the majority of my business is repeat and referral. To this day, do I love having to go out and make a cold impression, do whatever? No, I don't love it.
Right.
But I can tell you what the difference is. Okay. So for introverts, a lot of people think introversion is, oh, somebody just wants to like stay home in their pajamas and not go out and talk to people. But that's not true. Introverts love talking to people. Here's the difference. They need to have a very stimulating, meaningful conversation. Okay. So what depletes introverts is small talk, is something where they don't feel a connection. So if they have to go out and see a ton of people and it's very surface level conversation, they are drained. So for me, my friends, my family, everyone teases me that, you know, I'm a quote obsessed with talking about either disc or some type of platform or understanding ourselves. So because that's such a passion for me and I'm able to talk to people about it, that fuels me. I don't feel that same level of, oh, I got it. If you said to me, okay, Victoria, we're going to come out and we're going to meet 15 people and we're going to talk about politics or sports, or I would think, oh my God, what a nightmare. What will I do? But if I'm having conversations with people where I'm connecting with them and I'm able to tell them what is inspiring me or what I think would be a game changer for them, I'm fired up. I'm fueled up. I'm passionate by that. And then again, the other main differentiator with an introvert is I can do that. I just need to then come home and plug in my battery, so to speak, right? So I need to come back, charge my battery, and then I can go back and do it all over again. Whereas extroverts, of course, the more they're talking, the more they're interacting, their social battery is just getting charged as they're doing it.
Right.
A lot of what I talk about is this exact thing, self-awareness. If you are measuring yourself by a different set of circumstances, something that's not applicable to you, you're not going to feel great about yourself. If you go back and do readings, a lot of the world was kind of set up with this extrovert kind of ideal. And thankfully, that's shifting. People are understanding. And a lot of people, you may be surprised, I think, by a lot of people who are introverts. I don't know, Dwayne, if you know Brené Brown or you read any of her books, or she's, I don't even know how to describe her. She's so many things, but she is a researcher. She's a speaker. She owns her own business, but she has written some really great books. Dare to Lead is a really big one. She's very big on empathy and understanding that, but she is such, when you see her, she's such a comfortable public speaker. She is so brilliant. And she is a self-proclaimed introvert. And people are gobsmacked by that. You really, you can speak to 20,000 people? And she's like, yeah, because this is what I'm doing. I'm passionate about this. But if you make me go to a dinner party and just have idle chit-chat, I would rather hide under the table. I think there's sort of becoming a shift in people's understanding of what that really means. I'm proud to represent that. I do the same thing. Heather will often joke with me, like, what? You can get up and you're talking in front of ever many people? Yeah, but not on anything, on the things that matter to me, on the things that I think I have value to and I feel inspired by.
Right. It's funny. I often refer to myself as like I'm the most extroverted introvert you'll ever meet because mm-hmm. I don't seem to need to go and charge my battery. But, you know, I'd rather jump out a window than have a surface level conversation, you know, that is just trivial over dinner and stuff like that. It's like, oh man, like, you know, if there's some interest in it, whatever, you know, the masters, okay, I'll have that conversation. But you know, just general, you know, trivial conversation, I struggle deeply with it. And I'd rather stay home.
We have that in common then for sure. I feel exactly the same way.
It's interesting, like the way you framed introvert, I've not heard it kind of put that way. Thank you for sharing it because I'd be sure a lot of people are like, oh, I can relate to that in a deep way.
Yeah. And just to take away the quote stigma of it being a negative thing, right? Introverts are the thinkers. Introverts are the deep thinkers. They're the ones who are reflective. They're the ones sitting in a meeting and not talking the most, but listening and watching cues and formulating ideas. And then at the end of it, look out. They've got all kinds of stuff. Sometimes if you're too busy chatting and over talking, you're not learning.
Just that you say that, my question that was in my head was, you know, as it applies to introvert and extrovert, you know, from a team building standpoint, how does that show up? How do they interrelate and, you know, work together to make sure that, you know, they're getting the outcome the whole team is? And I know that we will get into DISC, and I think we should probably frame it as well somewhere down the road here for people, because if they don't know it actually, but I'm curious on the introvert extrovert thing before we move into DISC.
Again, so much of this comes back to self-awareness, and this is something that you can achieve either doing DISC or EQ coaching to be able to have an understanding of it. But I think exactly sort of that scenario that I gave you, I think a lot of times extroverted people, they want to have maybe a lot of meetings, they want to have a lot of conversations, and they will often be the ones talking the most. What happens there, though, is that they're not necessarily listening and leaning into the other ideas. And so what I would say, and this will totally frame up with DISC, oftentimes those are the idea people, which is great. We need idea people. The whole point of this is on a team, we need every kind of DISC profile, every kind of different thing, because you want to be collectively strong, right? You want to avoid blind spots or gaps. So let's have a fully formed team that has a multitude of different strengths and personalities. So often the people that are talking a lot, they're the idea people. So they come up with ideas very quickly. They're very good, I would say, at like the front end stuff. Why don't we do this? Why don't we think of that? They're great maybe at out of the box thinking, all super important parts of creativity. Now, what you also need is you need the people who are going to poke holes in that, right? Because you can't go into something naively. You need someone to be that, a little bit of skepticism is healthy. Okay, well, what happens if we take that idea and X, Y, Z happens? Or, you know, that sounds great, but how are we going to implement it? So what I find often is the people who are more on the introverted side and, you know, in terms of DISC, often it's the S's and the C's. They are the ones who actually implement it. They may not come up with those initial ideas, but they're the ones to kind of bring them down to reality, build them out into a structure and a process, and then they're the ones who actually end up executing.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense. From a DISC standpoint, like I would frame this conversation for the audience. One of the conversations I wanted to have with you was how do we use tools? Because this has come up in previous conversations on the podcast.
Yes.
What tools can we use to create the right team now more than ever? And I think as we move into AI, it's going to be more and more prevalent.
Yeah.
That we're going to require the ability of the team to interact a lot more effectively and efficiently. DISC is, you know, a behavioral profile tool. There's a number of different tools.
Yep.
DISC is what we use for our business, actually.
Right.
So I was interested. I mean, I don't use it in depth. I mean, and I think I'm not much different than a lot of people where we use the tool because we want to kind of understand, hey, what's this person all about? Mm-hmm. But how deep do we really go and how much understanding do we have? And I'm curious to get some insight from you about like how we could use a tool like DISC. If you could maybe frame what DISC stands for And then how we use it is in building teams and strategizing and working together, and what, you know, the audience's options would be if they were to use a tool like this that allows them to kind of emphasize their teams to kind of accomplish their goals inside the organization.
So yeah, there's a lot in that question. So keep me on track, Dwayne. If I forget some of those, reel me back in. I like what you said about, oh, well, like we use it with our company, but, you know, maybe for this. So what I'm just going to pick up on that, because I think a lot of people are only getting the tip of the iceberg with DISC, right? So often they'll run it, they'll use it as sort of a tool just to hire someone, see, is this a good fit for the role? Yes, no, okay. And then they maybe don't do anything else with it. And then I like how you took it to the next level of what can we really learn with it? How can we use it in terms of team building? In terms of answering the team building, what's amazing about having your employees profiled is when you are building out a team, you can do it strategically. Okay. So when you have everybody's profiles, I can run something that's called a team audit. And what that does is it looks at, of course, what are the different profiles, right? And I'll jump in here and answer the question that you said. So DISC is an acronym. So D stands for dominance. That sounds kind of harsh, but it is the original word from 1928. So DISC has been around since 1928, created at Harvard University. And just to touch on what you said too, it is the most widely used assessment model in the world. So that's probably why you're using it. Sometimes people will say things like, oh, I don't know DISC, but I know colors, or I don't know DISC, but I know, and they'll say something else. Guess what? Anything that has four quadrants of behavior is all derived from DISC. So it's sometimes wrapped up in a different bow, but it comes back to that DISC theory that was created in 1928. And it's obviously still going strong. And it's, of course, being updated and modified, but that is the most common. Why is it the most common? It was created specifically for the workplace. Okay. So it was looking at how do these different personality styles come in and interact. D for dominance. A lot of times now people will modernize it and say things more like a driver. D, of course, is a personality type that is very much focused on the bottom line. They're very results focused, achievement driven, just very much eye on the prize. And they can be very direct and assertive. And again, to a different personality style who doesn't understand it, they may not understand that. And here comes into why we have to have these kinds of workshops.
Hence the word dominance.
Right? Right. I is influence. People who have high I's, they usually enjoy interacting with people. A lot of times you'll find people in sales have very high eyes. They're drawn to it. Doesn't mean you can't do sales if you don't have it, but you are naturally, you know, it's almost like moth to a flame. You're just like, oh, people, interaction. So eyes are drawn to it in abundance. They're affable. They're charming. They go with their gut. That's kind of a lot of the stuff that drives eyes. S stands for steadiness. So steadiness, they are much more reflective people. They're introspective. They are more about finishing than starting. So they're tenacious. Like they won't let something go. If they're determined to do something, they will do it. They make great listeners. You'll often find them supporting industry. So it could be healthcare professionals like nurses or teachers or even coaches and managers. And then C being compliance, people who are high in C are very driven by facts, details. They really want to work to high standards. The worst thing in the world for them would be to make a mistake. So they can be viewed as perfectionistic. And they are, again, just very driven with doing a good job, learning as much as they can, really focused on that. So that's a very, very quick overview of what those four factors are. But back to the team thing. So once you know what your employees' DISC profiles are and what are they driven by and motivated by, this is a really important piece in managing them. If you're only using it to, like, say, recruit them to have an interview, to be able to have a chat with them, that's great. That's definitely an asset. But if you just leave it there, you will miss out on how do you manage them according to their style? How do you motivate them? We're not all motivated by the same thing. And it may shock a lot of people, especially high Ds. It shocks them to no end if I say to them, well, this person is an SC, so they are not motivated by those tangible goals that you're giving them. You're saying, oh, there's going to be a bonus. There's going to be whatever. They're like, yeah, who doesn't want that? I'm like, I agree. Who doesn't want it? But that's not their prime motivator.
Right.
Their prime motivator is to feel seen, to feel like they're contributing something to this team. So if you just slightly shift your language, if you focus on this, you have now built a stronger connection. And guess what? That team member is going to respond in kind. And now you have them on side. And now the two of you are going to be able to take your relationship to a newer level, and you're both going to achieve more. That's really the motivating managing piece of DISC. And again, when you're doing this as a team exercise, team building, knowing what everyone's different factors are great, because not only does each person have a DISC profile, but now the whole team, company, they have their own DISC graph. So what does this team's DISC profile look like? If you want to add to that down the road, let's say you're like, oh, we're really heavy on C and we're not very heavy on I, and we have a lot of interpersonal things or a lot of sales things. Guess what? Strategically looking forward, you know, you have to fill that gap. You can look at this as a structural tool. Okay, guess what? Next time we're going to look for somebody who's got higher influence. Sometimes I've seen people shift roles. So alignment of roles. So sometimes somebody, they know they're a good employee and they're like, they just maybe are not, I don't know, I feel like they could do more. I feel like I'm not getting whatever out of them. And it turns out, well, maybe you haven't aligned them with what their natural strengths are. And I've seen them shift. I've seen sometimes people take a few duties off their plate and maybe take some from somebody else who wasn't loving it, shift it around, streamline it. Boom. Everybody now is working in their zone of strength and they're crushing it. To be able to see that is amazing. To be able to help facilitate that is amazing. I touched on some of that. Tell me what else it was that I was.
Well, I mean, it's interesting. You know, the thing that popped into my head was, or no, we totally use it surface level, right? This is not about me, but my hallucination is that we're probably not that much different than a lot of people. And I think a lot of people just in general in have a tendency to get to, whether it's in their fitness level, whether it's in their, you know, their health, their nutrition, they get to a certain point. And I refer to it as like, we're either moving away from pain or moving towards pleasure. And the minute we move far enough away from pain, the leverage starts to reduce drastically. So therefore, our motivation to keep pursuing on one track begins to get lower and lower and lower the farther away from pain you get, because we'll do more to move away from pain than we will to move towards pleasure. I think sometimes, like as you were talking, I was like, God, like, okay, you got the four different quadrants of personalities, and you know, there's not only dealing with the personalities themselves, but it's the reaction from one personality to another personality. Like, I'll be honest, I have this joking phrase about high eyes. I'm like, oh, that's the bullshitter category, right? They're selling you on something, whether it's themselves, they're the life of the party, they're telling a story. I'm joking about that, but
yeah, of course.
But it's one of those things where you go, a D might look at an I and just, or all the rest of them just say, like you said earlier, what do you mean you don't want the commission? What do you mean you don't want to win the car or whatever, or win whatever, win anything?
The thing, and this is a good point. So when we are looking at how we're interacting, so we know what's in our heads, right? So if we make a statement or we're coming across a certain way, we know what we are intending. The person across from us, or the person at the table, our colleague, our client, they can't read our brain, so they don't know. And so if we have different DISC profiles, one of the main things that we do is we go into it making assumptions. Now, those assumptions are driven by our own personality style. The way we see our behavior is not how the person across the table sees it. This is something that I will often incorporate in my DISC coaching. So when I'm coaching someone, first of all, I'm showing them the strengths of their profile. I always want people to see what's amazing about their profile, because I really believe, I am obviously a big proponent of self-improvement, but I also believe you shouldn't spend your life swimming against the current. I think you need to know what your zone of excellence is. What is your strength? And I think you should do everything you can to create the circumstances to allow yourself to be in that zone of strength. So when I am doing this coaching with people on their profiles, I will give them the positive version of the words that describe them. But then I'll say, you know what an important part is in self-discovery and growth is understanding how you might be interpreted by somebody else. Okay. And I always warn them, okay, here comes the part. And it's amazing how you can take descriptive words and flip them. They are different to a different style. So let me give you an example for high D. High D, a positive word I would say about high D is ambitious and confident. Well, if we do a word flip on that, we could see pushy, aggressive. And so does that mean that the person is pushy and aggressive? No. But to a different personality style, if that's how you're coming across, you need to know that. And you need to be like, huh, what are some things I can do to ensure that I am recognizing this is a different personality style than me? And how can I make sure I'm not tripping this process up? This is huge, as you can imagine, in sales, in terms of trying to connect with a prospect or client. Because if you're misreading them and you're pulling high D symbols and they're a high S, and they're just like, oh, that's how they're seeing you. And so this can be a real light bulb moment. They're like, oh, but I'm not pushy. I'm not aggressive. I'm like, no, I know. But that's what that style is. is doing. And conversely, so for instance, you know, we talked about high eyes, right? And you made that joke. High eyes, I think, are very optimistic, right? They're positive, they're cheerful. But what is the opposite of that? And how might somebody view them? Naive, disingenuous, meaning like phony or fake. And I gotta tell you, they're mostly not. That's who they are. That is just who they are. But if you are someone who is more like on the skeptical side, you'll be like, oh my gosh, like my BS meter just went off. Mm-hmm. And for them to understand that is really important, right? You can see that I get really fired up by this because it is so key to building interpersonal connections is to have these understandings, see the things that maybe trip us up. And probably the most interesting example of this is either in a team building workshop, or I sometimes will do like a two-person facilitation. Sometimes if somebody's transitioning into a new role and they're going to be working closely with someone, of course I have it always. So sometimes it's fun, it's team building. Other times I'm called in because there is a bit of a crisis situation where things are not going well. And we do this, it's like forced empathy. I don't know if you're familiar with that term, Chris Voss. I think he's the one that came up with it, hostage negotiator. But anyway, the forced empathy is really just taking a walk in someone else's shoes. So you make that person, right? You make the other person now explain the contrary perspective kind of thing. And you look to see what the value is in that. And so that's an exercise that I will do. And it's incredible. It's incredible when you can really take on that. You know, empathy comes a lot easier to some people than others. But if you're someone who it doesn't come natural to, it can be worked upon and built upon with exercises like this, with the EQ coaching that I do. It's something that is a game changer.
Holy smokes. There's a lot of stuff here. This is a business podcast, but this is not just critical in business. I mean, you can start to see where this falls over in your intimate relationships or your family relationships, where if you have a dad or a mom who's a D and a, you know, a child who's a compliance.
Yes.
You can see where the, well, actually I'd written down, you know, my note there, which was messaging/communication. You know, you had said something earlier where you may explain something and you're explaining it from your perspective, but they're hearing it from their perspective. And you're like, no, I was very, very clear, right? D's will be like, oh, no, I was very clear, like da, 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 da. But it would have been perceived in a different way, aka, wow, he was so aggressive when he was explaining that to me. And then they don't perceive the whole entire message. There's so many pieces going on here. I guess my overall question is what is the best way for us to construct or deconstruct this disc and then start to make it make sense for, you know, the listener in regards to how they might utilize it to build a team, to use it as a tool to analyze what they've currently got. And they're probably listening right away and I go, oh yeah, Susie's an I, John's a D. What's our best route here to because I really believe that this is the core to team building. I think that this is, and I'm not necessarily like the core to team building is effective messaging and communication and working together and understanding and like you say, having that empathy, you know, inside a workplace or a work group to be able to optimize most efficiently. How do we help the listener kind of get there with their business or with their people to start to identify and drop the seeds? That's what I'm thinking. It's not even a question. It's just a thought process and I'm relying on you to go with it.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I heard you saying, and it was building off of exactly that conversation we had. Hey, I'm saying it. How much more clear can I be? It's like, well, you can't just keep saying it that way. It's a different style. So one of the things that we do in the team building workshops is everyone is allowed to have a request of a two do's and two don'ts in terms of communication. And the reason that it works well to use a DISC platform is because it depersonalizes it. So as you can imagine, people come into things with baggage, right? So let's say they've worked with somebody for 6 years and they're like, oh no, oh, Dwayne is always saying this. So I know he must think that I'm not as smart as him because I don't respond as quickly, or maybe I'm not as passionate as him because I don't say it as directly. So they are coming in maybe with a little bit of that baggage and that belief. And this is what I was talking about earlier, where it's so rewarding to see these misconceptions evaporate once they understand DISCs. Now, instead of saying, oh, this is Dwayne, it's Dwayne's high D. Dwayne's high D is looking for results, is looking for the bottom line, is looking to what can be achieved, and is solution oriented, and all of those things. And so when somebody now, and this is what I do, we kind of teach a little DISC language so that we're not going to say Dwayne and Victoria, we're going to say Dwayne's high D, Victoria's high S. I would say, hey, Dwayne, my high S needs a little bit more time to reflect on that. I don't have an answer for you right now, but check in with me at the end of the day, or can I sleep on it and get back to you? Now, instead of you thinking, oh, God, is she stalling? Is she not paying attention? You'll be like, oh, yeah, she's an S. She needs that extra time for reflection. And what's going to happen if I give her that time is I'm going to need a way better answer and perhaps even proposal lined out how it's going to look. I'm going to do that. Everyone has a template, so they know what their profiles are. They will line it up. For instance, high D's will be like to do's. And so it would be something like, don't give me unnecessary details, for instance, for high D's. Can you just like show me?
Oh, that's funny. Sorry. I tell my team, like, if you send me an email that's got more than two or three sentences, I'm not going to read it.
So exactly.
I guess I'm a D.
Yeah. Oh, I think from our phone call last week, I think I said that to you. I think, for instance, you would have the opportunity to say that. Hey, could you try to just, you know, maybe do this? And even some things are like that. Hey, I don't need a phone call. Can you just shoot me a text? And now again, when we talk to about our eyes, the people that are our high eyes, they are also not great really with emails or texts, but that's because they want a personal connection. So they would rather have a phone call. Even if it's quick, they would rather hear your voice. They would rather be able to connect.
Or more importantly, do a Zoom probably.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. If they can't see you, if they can't be in person, that's exactly right. Over COVID, I took a really deep dive into a lot of this. I had to come up with different ways. And so exactly for high eyes, I said, if you can, if it's a client, try to have the Zoom so that you can at least, you're getting some of it. It's not the same as in-person mirror neurons, right? Coming back and forth and feeling what that person's feeling, but it's pretty close. You're able to see they're smiling. You're able to see what they're wearing. There's some kind of a connection there. If you're thinking, oh my God, this is exhausting. I have to adapt my behavior to every single person. It's one of those things where it's like, no, we're going to try our best, but don't forget they're adapting to you too. We're going to take two steps this way. They're going to take two steps this way, and we're going to end up meeting in the middle. I follow up with teams a few weeks down the road. You know, I send out the whole do's and don'ts and I say, hey guys, how's it going? Like, are you? And some of them will say, you know what? I put a post-it note up to my computer and I was like, oh, I was going to send Dwayne an email, but I remembered and I looked. And now instead, I'm just going to either shoot him a quick text or I'm going to just pick up the phone and say, hey, we're going to do this or this. What do you think? Great. Okay, we'll move on. And you're going to be trying to do the same thing. It's an effort, but nothing that's worth achieving doesn't have an effort involved. And what I always say is it's an effort for maybe the first week or two. And then as you will see, it becomes second nature and you just start to build. And once you start building these skills, it comes so much easier. One of the other things that we would do in that is I call it like a team charter. As a team, we are always going to strive to do these three things. We're going to strive to avoid these three things. And where that's come from is brainstorming that we've done in the session, where we hear everybody's perspective and we can kind of agree on, you know what, here are some ground rules sort of for playing in the sandbox. No matter what, we're going to make sure we do this. And no matter what, we're going to make sure we avoid that. And so it's liberating because it allows people to have conversations where they're able to reveal some things that they wouldn't if A, there wasn't a third party, being me, an objective third party facilitator there to help with that. And also because they can now sort of pin it on a profile. So, oh, it's not me, Victoria, saying this to you, Dwayne. This is my high S. My high S is driven by this. You wouldn't believe how much easier people will reveal things because they can kind of sidestep it and put it onto that disc factor. It opens up the doors for communication tremendously.
Oh yeah, I can see, like, for sure. It's not personal. It's not direct. It's, oh, a D, one who is a D, you know, likes things this way. One who is an I prefers it this way.
Exactly. And then it's not about blaming. It's not about whatever. It's like, oh, right. This is who he is. This is what's going on. And I mean, you mentioned earlier too, even in personal life, I always, you know, I'll tell the story often that we get used to our loved ones and their behavior patterns, right? So for me, my husband is a super high D. And for those of you who know DISC, often we have more than one high factor. Well, not him. He only has the high D. I always make a joke about that. So it's one of those things where, sure, did I know that? I accepted it. So I realized it. I was like, okay. But then once I got into DISC and I understood it, well, what a difference that made. It's one thing to accept something. It's one thing to understand it. It completely changes where it's coming from. Things that might have hurt my feelings or I might have taken offense at or misunderstood have a framework now. So to your point earlier, yeah, you can apply this also to your interpersonal family and friends and all of that stuff. It's limitless.
I'm with you on that. My wife is right on the outside edge of the D. I'm actually a DI, I think. It's been like 100 years since I've done one, but
I would say that's on the money.
Yeah, DI. But she's like right on the, like we joke about it. Like she's like right on the outer edge of the D middle. Like it's pretty funny. I'm curious, can you give us, because you had talked a little bit about D's and you talked a little bit about I's, but I'd be curious on the S's and the C's, like how do they prefer to be communicated with, just so that, you know, people can start to relate it to somebody that they might know in their personal life or in their office.
Absolutely. S's. So one of the funny things, one of the best tips I always give people about talking to an S is try not to put an S on the spot. High S's, because they are very introspective and reflective, they're processors. They need to think about things. They're the person you might want to say, hey, you know what? You know, have a think about it. Get back to me. Let me know, or, you know, sleep on it. S's have this thing where if you say to them, oh my gosh, there's a deadline, like you have to tell me now, you'll actually put them into a more of a panic mode. And here's a little ironic twist with high S's. If you say to them, take your time, get back to me, ironically, they'll get back to you faster because you've given them permission. You've literally like taken a brick off their shoulders. And now you've said you've got the time. And I guarantee you they're going to come back faster because you have now given them permission to breathe.
Right. They don't feel pressured.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What does that stand for again?
S is steadiness. And that's just it. Steadiness. Everything about them, their pace. S is very much about pace too. S's work at a very steady pace, whereas low S's, so people have a low S, and again, low doesn't mean bad. It just means that's not your high factor. So low S's actually thrive on restless energy, multitasking, doing a whole bunch of things. High S and low S can look very different. Low S's to high S would be like, what's taking you so long? Like, I would have done this. And high S looks at low S like, well, like you are super frantic and chaotic and maybe you should cut down on your caffeine because they think they're going crazy, right? That's a really big distinction with S. That would really be the big thing. Give them the time to process, reflect, and they will come back to you with a very well thought out and they'll feel more comfortable about it and you will get a better result.
Just a quick question on that. If we get too far down the road, I'll forget. But like, do they need kindness or like the approachability method or factor or like on the, I guess on the EQ side, like, you know, how would you approach that? You know, they need time, I get it, and they need to process, but is there a general way that they like to be addressed?
I think this is so interesting. And I feel like this must be like some kind of perception or intuition on your part, Duane, because you're really honing in on this one. S is the one I spend the most time explaining. This is very interesting because it is such a nuanced dance with high S's. And I'll tell you why. S's are listeners versus talkers. Okay. So then if you're talking to people in sales, if you were to say something, or if I were to say that to you, Duane, what do you do? Somebody's not talking. I's and D's, great. They're talking. They're giving you a lot of information. D is maybe being direct to the point. I is telling you their whole childhood traumas, everything coming up, maybe the too much information, but it helps because they're giving it to you, right? S's and C's, you're not getting it as easily, all right? And so then if I say to you, like, well, what do you do then for a listener versus the talker? Well, you know, what would you probably say? How do you get information out of them?
I mean, ask questions and be present, stick with them.
Right. And do you see now what I've just said before about S, why this is so tricky, such a delicate balance? Because yes, you have to draw them out. But on the other hand, what have I also said? You can't put them on the spot. Here's what I'm saying. I don't know if we've talked about this yet, but I do like behavioral sales training. So I will do talks with salespeople in terms of trying to assess what you're seeing and then the right approach to take. So this is one of the things that comes up. I always say S's are the toughest nuts to crack, but they're worth cracking. And I'll tell you why, because they are the ones who, they seem quiet and reserved at first, but once you've got them, usually like you've got them for life, and they are the source of your repeat and referral business. They will tell their friends, their family, their neighbors, their dentists. They will tell people about you. It's a matter of they're listening. So you need to show them, I'm listening. I care about you, but you have to do it in a more delicate manner. So you can't just be like, okay, so tell me, boom, ba boom, ba boom. You have to kind of match their energy a little bit. Like I said, they have a steady pace, even just your tone. Okay. So let's say I'm talking to D and I'm like, great, Duane, you know what? We're going to get this going. I like this project. Let's move. I'm using action words. I'm picking up my pace. With an S, I'm going to say, okay, so, you know, going forward, maybe would we want to consider this? Or, you know, I had an idea that this might work. Do you see? It's just a much more dialed back, evening out the tone, making sure that they're feeling comfortable. And the main thing too is not putting them on the spot. So you could say, I have some ideas. Here's what some of them are. no pressure to respond to me right away. If you want to shoot me an email tonight or go on a Connect tomorrow when you've had time to think about it, let's do that. It's kind of like a two-pronged approach. You can see that it's a very delicate dance.
Yep. Yep. And then because of this one, because you've stressed on this, I guess the question that pops into my head is how would they show up? Like, how will you know that they're an S?
Yeah.
I think it's probably pretty obvious, like how a D is going to show up and how an I is going to show up. We've kind of talked about that, but the S seems like it's, yeah, like you said, it's a little bit more complex. So
yep. Toughest nut
how
to crack.
How would you, when you're from a sales perspective, and we just finished two podcasts about sales, so we'll just stick with that theme. If you're sitting in front of an S, how are you going to know they're an S versus a C?
Great question, because we haven't really talked about C, and we'll talk about that in a minute. With an S, they're usually going to have like a neutral expression on their face. So one of the things I joke about with S is I always say they must be the best poker players, because they just sort of have this look. It doesn't have to be an unpleasant look. It could be like a half smile, or it could be just very neutral. And so that's why, you know, the whole poker thing. And you know, I always say the catchphrase for high S's could be keep calm and carry on. You don't know, though. There could be a volcano brewing underneath that S, but that is what they're giving to you. Some signs are that, a very neutral expression. And then there's the, what I call the infamous S nod. And this is where a lot of salespeople make mistakes. They interpret that nod that the S is giving them as, yes, I'm interested. You know, yeah, I'm going to sign up for this, whatever you're trying to sell me. And what that S nod really is doing, it's really just expanding on what they're about. They're about listening. So when they're nodding at you, that means I hear you. Okay, I'm listening, I'm taking it in, and I'm thinking about it. If you were to say, oh, okay, it seems like, you know, you're in agreement or you're whatever, can I sign you up? Can I whatever? And then you're going to get the boom, deer in the headlights, frozen look, and bam, they're going to shut the door. And I'm sure they'll be very nice about it. Oh, thank you, I need to think about it. But if you have tried to push them, if you've gone in for like that sort of quick close, which by the way, if you're dealing with a high D, you can go for quick closes. If a high D is nodding at you and giving you affirmations, go for a quick close, because you know what? That'll work for them. They're decisive. High S, you will lose them right there. And that is kind of the thing. So yeah, the neutral expression, the nodding, and then your approach there is just, you know what? Take your time. If there's anything I can do to answer your questions, if you want to have another meeting, that's great. You know, you might need to be prepared to have a couple meetings to get a high S on side, but I'll bring you back to that reminder of you want to get them on side, because these are the people that really will be your lifelong clients.
Right. That's interesting, because as you're saying that, I was like, the nod almost seems like it's an internal checkbox for them. Like, okay, got it. I understand. Yep. I see.
Yeah.
Yep. Very do. And they're
exactly. And it's all kind of going into the processor in the brain. Process. Okay. And they'll come back with it. Another thing to just, you know, kind of give somebody a little tip is, I think because S's are, they're sort of more like reserved and reflectors and all that. And sometimes people think they're not the decision makers. So especially if you're, it gets a lot, like what if you're trying to talk to, you know, if you're in a sale of some type and you're talking to a couple and one of them is definitely a D and one of them is definitely an S. So the most opposite disc profiles you can have, by the way, is a D and an S. Because of course, D pushes ahead. D is like results, now, go, focus. And S is think, reflect, take my time, process. So then it's like, oh, well, what do you do? And a lot of people, I'll pose that question in my workshops or my talks. And what, you know, what would you do? And a lot of people will say, well, clearly the D's the power there. The D's making the decision. So, you know, I'm going to do the D approach. And I was like, nope, it's not going to work so well. So in the moment, do you want to engage the D with the energy they're giving? 100%. You need to, because you don't want to lose them. So you're rapid fire answering those questions. You're doing whatever, but you're also turning and you're nodding and you're smiling at that S and basically saying, is that okay? Or did you have a question on that? You don't want to completely cut them out, because this is my point about S's. While they might seem pleasant and all of that kind of stuff, because one of the words you might remember me describing was tenacity. And so a high S will keep at it. The D might leave that meeting and go, wow, that was great. And I heard this, this, and this. And the S will be like, well, you know what? They said this and I don't really feel like they asked me this. And the D's like, oh, yeah, maybe. Okay. And then later on that night, the S will be like, and you know what else? And the next day, and you know what else I didn't get? S's will not let it go. So I like to tease sometimes with the factors and give them alliterative descriptors. So S can also mean stubborn. So with that persistence and tenacity, sometimes it can be stubborn. And an S will wear down a D. A D finally be like, okay, fine. this is not going to be worth it.
So it's interesting. Like my hallucination is, and this is based on a little bit of, well, my current situation, actually, I think my CFO is an S. And so I guess my question is this, is based on my hallucination is, will a D look to the S, especially if they're on an executive team or in the decision-making process? My hallucination is they would look to an S, a D would look to an S because a D is like, let's get this on. What do you want? I don't have time to deal with this. What's the decision? How are we doing it? Like they're very abrupt, short. Let's get things going. So they rely on an S to flush out the information and help process that decision. Like I think I do that a lot actually with my CFO. Like I'll look to him to say, hey, mm-hmm. what are we doing here?
Sure. So it's checks and balances, right? Like I said, they're sort of the two most opposite. D, push ahead. Let's go. S, let's think about it. I would also say would almost guarantee you that your CFO has a high C. And maybe this is a good transition point to talk about what high C is. Quite likely, it's a combination. It's very common to see C's and S's grouped together when people have two factors and I's and D's. So even you yourself said, I think I probably am a combination of a D and an I. That's a very common combination, as is having a C and an S. For C's, yes, and you said your CFO. So C's are very much driven by data, by information. They are 100% logic. Don't ever try to like infuse some kind of emotion. Well, what's your gut telling you? They'll just give you this look like, what? Like, yeah, I might be having a feeling, but I need to apply logic to this. I'm not going to make a decision that's not rational, that's not logical, that's not factual. We will often see C's in jobs that are very much data analysis, accountants, engineers, even architects. So something that's very precise, so working to high standards, but also that whole thing about we need to think this through. And C's do not like to make decisions that aren't data driven. So you don't ever want to say, what's your gut telling you? Or, you know, you must, it's like, no, let me see it. And so if you're ever trying to get a C on board, whether that person's on your team, the way you're going to speak to them is going to be different, right? Even a modification of a word. These are the things that are amazing. These are the things that we do in my workshops. With an I, you would say, well, how do you feel about that, right? Feel. I's are emotive. It's about feeling. With a C, you would say, what do you think about that? Such a minor little difference, right? But that's going to make a difference. You're now speaking their language. Because for C, it's like, yeah, it doesn't matter what I feel. I think this is what the information is telling me. With I's, it's like, oh, but this makes me feel this way. And that's what's going to get me on board. Just these little tweaks make such a big difference. And I would guess that your CFO is probably that combination of the C and the S. And that's great because ideally, when people are building teams, they want to structure a team. I will always say to them, you really do, especially if you're working with somebody closely in a partnership. Ideally, you would like to have the opposite profile for strategy because that person's going to catch you when you're impulsive and yeah, let's do it. That person's going to say, but did you think about these six factors? And what about this potential scenario that could come up? And then together, you're going to make a more informed decision. That's the first part. Let's build it strategically. Then the second part is, oh, now we're these opposite profiles. How do we now play nicely in the sandbox? And that's where step two comes in, where some of the stuff we talked about, you learn the best ways to communicate with each other. You learn that a word that might seem harsh to you does not seem harsh to them. And these are kind of the takeaways. There's no surprise that most married couples, I think we do this in our lives instinctively. Most married couples have opposite DISC profiles. And I don't think that's by accident. I think we're drawn to what is different.
Opposites attract.
Yeah, they do.
Say, yeah. What does C stand for again?
Compliance.
Compliance. Okay.
But sometimes again, because people change it. So sometimes people will describe it as conscientious, which is also a good word. Also, they'll say correct. Again, also a good word. C's hate making mistakes. The compliance part comes into the fact that C's generally are rule followers. I do want to put the caveat in that they have to really agree with the set of rules. Like they don't just blindly follow rules. But if there is a procedure and they think, well, this is right, and you try to diverge from that, you're going to hear, oh no, that's not the way it's done. C's very much have a way of this is the right way and that is the wrong way type of thinking. So they can be sometimes hard to budge out of that position when they feel like this is right. The knowledge is backing this up. The data is backing this up. Quite often, C's can kind of come across as inflexible. And the way to really kind of get that is to, again, engage them on their level. Look at information, talk to them in a way that they're going to respond to, not saying, what's your gut telling you? But okay, let's have a look at these stats. And then maybe perhaps Is there another judgment we could pull from that? Again, you're going to be using those kinds of words, but how you engage is key.
Everyone, thank you so much for listening and tuning in to our conversation with Victoria Terrio. You know, I just love how she left her current position after 20 years to go out and start her own business, which is phenomenal and inspiring, to be honest with you. That's a humongous jump. But I love, you know, the content that we're talking about, because it really steps up to the conversation of building teams and how effective and how much in control we are as business owners or leaders to building these teams. So thank you so much for tuning in. We have the second part of the episode will air next week, and we appreciate you listening. So thank you so much. Tune in next week with more of Victoria Terrio on Disc Profile and the EQ Profile as well. So we'll see you next week. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for listening. I appreciate you being with us. If you found value in the show and know a friend or a coworker who could benefit from the conversation, please share the link via text or on social media. Remember, each share creates a ripple effect of knowledge and inspiration. We'll see you next week.
The views, information, or opinions expressed by guests during the Business of Doing Business podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Duane Kerrigan and his affiliates. Duane Kerrigan, or the Business of Doing Business podcast, is not responsible for and does not verify the accuracy of any of the information contained in the podcast series. The primary purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. Listeners are advised to consult with a qualified professional or specialist before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast.